If you have anything in you at all, and any skill or ability or heart or whatever, when things are like they should be, you know, you can really perform well. Things can go good for you. But the real strength of our lives happen when things don't go well, when stuff happens that you don't expect. Look at your neighbor and say, how do you recover? Do you recover well? Or does life have to be lived in the essence of only that which is, let's just say controllable? But life's not like that, is it? Life very often gets outside the lines. Jesus doesn't color inside the lines. We've just come through a season of the year, Christmas, that tells us that God does not matter. God does not care about whether he makes things easy for us. Everything about the season that we just went through is difficult. Everything is out of the ordinary. A virgin conceiving with no sexual activity whatsoever. A baby being born in a manger that's the king of the world. Wise men seeing a star in the east and setting out on a 2-year journey to get to see the child. Angels telling nasty, dirty, low-class shepherds in the field, get out there and proclaim the message that God's changed everything. Yeah. Yeah, that's life. That's life. And that happens quite often in our life. And as we face opportunities like we do now at the beginning of a year, to think about what we would do and what we would want and what God's going to do in our life, it's a good time to be circumspect about some things. I quite often in my own heart sigh and pray and ask God to, God, give me strength. Give me hope. Give me faith. God, work in my heart. And usually that comes after something or in the middle of something that's just totally devastating. Something that's terribly hard, terribly difficult in life. And I cry out to God for strength, for mercy, for grace, for provision, for thoughts, for whatever it might be. And I feel quite comfortable telling you this. I know that really doesn't seem to fit. You're the pastor. You're not supposed to feel like that. You're supposed to be, you know, you live on Cotton Candy Lane and Powder Puff Drive down there, and life is a bowl of cherries for you. You have oil that comes from your lips and fire that comes from your eyes. Yeah, yeah, I do. I do. But it's not always like that. And like you, I feel comfortable telling you because I feel that you have times like that too. And we cry the Lord and we seek those things that would bless and strengthen and encourage our lives to be everything that God has called us to be. Are there some things that we can do? Is there any part we might play in this cry to the Lord, give me strength? I mean, is that just totally his responsibility to perform that in my life? Or do I have some part to play in this prayer that I've just issued? Well, to find that, this week I was reading in the book of Hebrews. How many of you have ever read the book of Hebrews? Any part, anything? Yeah, Hebrews. For those who may not have read it, and you might not be Bible people, and so you just really are not aware, Book of Hebrews is a New Testament book written by we don't know who. A lot of people say it's the Apostle Paul that wrote the book of Hebrews. And a lot of things in Hebrews does sound like the Apostle Paul, but not everything. So we're really not sure. All we know is that the Holy Spirit inspired it and someone wrote it down for us. Because certainly as you read it, you can see the Holy Spirit's footprints all through the book. The book is written to be, and if you don't mind me just for a second, because I want to mention this in connection with Samson today, because he's a picture of strength. He's a picture of the strongest person that's ever lived on the earth. Physically speaking, he's the Rambo or the Terminator or the Die Hard or the whatever the latest big tough guy is nowadays. He's that. That's Samson. Samson was the most awesomely gifted, awesomely equipped, greatest deliverer that God ever put on this earth. He had all the tools. He had all the goods. And so I thought it might be good for us to look at a strong person. But before we get to that, I would like to just give you one little thought about Hebrews, because, by the way, God's birthing around in Hebrews in my heart. I just given you a warning about that for the days to come. You might hear a little about Hebrews, and it's just such an inspiring thing for us, because the book was written to be an encouragement to our lives. The book of Hebrews was written to encourage Christians who were going through crisis times. When you were having troubles, when your confidence in God was being challenged and you were being buffeted about, and the enemy was trying to change your thoughts about Jesus and your understanding about the kingdom of God and the fact that you are a child of God and that there is a heaven above and that he does walk with you and he is your friend and your provider and he's closer than a brother and he doesn't leave you. Because the Hebrews at this time were being talked to by their friends, the friends at the synagogue. The friends at the synagogue, they used to go to church at the synagogue, these Christian Hebrews, these Christian believers now. And they used to go to church together, and so their friends who didn't come with them and didn't follow Christ were still at the synagogue. And every week at the synagogue, they would miss the Hebrew Christians. And during the week, you know, they'd see them at the grocery store and then say, "We missed you at synagogue today." "I don't go to synagogue anymore. I'm following Christ." Well, we know, but we still miss you. And you know, really, you don't have to leave us to follow Christ. That was the pitch. You don't have to leave us to follow Christ. You know, Judaism and Christianity dovetail. And so you don't have to leave them to come with us. Just come with us every now and then. Just come to church with us and sit here and you know, and enjoy that and our friendship and we miss you and you're part of our life and come on back, would you? And so they were being tempted to go back to something they used to be. Something that was far inferior to what they were. They used to follow the law and bulls and goats and sacrifices and turtle doves and pigeons and the blood of the bull and the altar and all of that. And now they're following Christ, the Savior of the world, whose blood washed away all our sin. And so the writer of Hebrews was saying to them basically, look, don't go back. Don't give up something greater for something lesser. Don't go back to what you used to be, because you really do have a high priest that has been touched with the feelings of your infirmities. You really do have a high priest that you can come before and he will give you grace and mercy. You have a high priest that stands with you and walks with you and moves with you, and you can have confidence in him. And when you have confidence in him, then you can boldly come to the throne of grace that you might find grace and mercy in times of need. So don't go back. Stay where you are. What you have is way superior than to where you're going. Jesus is greater than Abraham. Jesus is greater than Moses. Jesus is greater than the law. Jesus is greater than the prophets. Jesus is greater than David. Jesus is greater than Solomon. Jesus is greater than everything. And you need to follow him. And that's Hebrews. In that book of Hebrews, there's an 11th chapter. And in chapter 11 of the book of Hebrews, you have the Hall of Fame of Faith. You have a whole chapter full of faithful people that are mentioned. Great, strong, faithful people that are mentioned. And people like Abraham and Sarah and Jacob and Joseph and they're just, the list just goes down and down and down, and David and Jephthah and finally it comes down, after it's named a whole bunch, it comes down to like verse 32, and then it just clumps a whole bunch of them together. Look at what it says. Well, how much more do I need to say? Yeah, right. He's already said all the way down. He said 31 verses already about all these great things that faith did and people did through faith. And then he said, well, how much more do I need to say? It would take too long to recount the stories of the faith of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and David and Samuel and all the prophets. And so he's listing here our man Samson as one of the great faithful people that have lived on this earth and that God has worked through them because of their faith. Now, if you know the story of Samson, you might find that just a little bit unusual to say about Samson. Because Samson, really up until the very last act of his life, really didn't show much faith, really. He really let us all down. Because like I mentioned to you, he was the strongest person physically that ever lived on this earth. He was tremendously brilliant. He was tremendously capable. He was tremendously able. He was called to be one of the judges of Israel. And now that means a judge. If you look at in your Old Testament, the book of Judges is about judges that Israel had. And don't think of judges like a judge that sits on a courtroom and bangs a gavel. Think about a judge as a military conqueror, a military champion that leads the country and leads them to victory and defeats the enemy in their life. And Israel had them, and Samson was one of them, and he had an opportunity to be tremendous, but because of some things in his life. Look at your neighbor and say, you know, some things. Yeah, some things, because of some things in his life. He didn't quite live up to what he could have been, and therefore, Samson becomes someone that can teach us something. What can Samson teach us? Well, he can teach us what happens when you get careless about the things that God has placed in your life and called you to and commissioned you to be in life. You know, I asked a moment ago, I said, is there anything we can do? Is there any part we can play? When we ask God, God strengthen me, God encourage me, God bless me, God, you know, is there anything we can play? Well, Samson teaches us, well, yes, there are some things that are really totally your responsibility, actually. Yeah. You know, there are a lot of times we want to throw things off on God, right? I mean, we want God to do everything. How many of you have ever prayed, and this is rhetorical, so you don't have to answer out loud, all right? How many of you have ever prayed for patience? You said, God, I want patience, and I mean right now. Okay, I mean, yeah, give me some patience and give it to me now, Lord. Yeah, yeah. And what did God do? Did he give you patience? No. What did he do? He gave you tribulation. You know why? Because the only way you get patience in your life is living through tribulation. And once you've dealt with the tribulation, then you can be a more patient person. How many of you have ever prayed for humility? You know, Lord, I want to be humble. Lord, make me humble. Lord, give me a humble spirit. Give me a humble heart. Lord, give me a... Yeah. And you prayed for humility. Did God give it to you? No. Let me tell you what he does. He said, no, you humble yourself. I mean, my job is to love you. Your job is to humble yourself, James says, book of James. Humble yourself. God said, God, I want you to humble me. No, you humble yourself. God, come on, please help me, God. Humble. No, that's something I've got. God, please. All right. Here you go. What does God do? God humiliates you. Then you humble yourself. Yeah. I saw an old, what is that old country preacher in the cartoons in the newspaper? I hadn't read a newspaper in so long. Young people, and you guys may not even know what I'm talking about when I say a newspaper, you know. It's a picture. You probably have a picture online of it every now and then. You know, it's actually paper that had writing and stuff on it, and it was kind of bulky and hard to handle. But that's the way we used to get stuff, and you know, read it and that kind of thing. And there were some cartoons in there, and one of them there was a country preacher. I think his name was Kudzu, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's the cartoon. And old Kudzu was a country preacher, and in one little frame he stepped up behind the pulpit, and then he in the next frame he was saying to the people, "Humble me, Lord. I want to be a humble man." And then in the next scene, a lightning bolt came out of the sky and hit his belt buckle. And in the last scene, his britches fell to the ground, exposing boxer shorts with hearts on them. And he was looking up going, "This is a test, ain't it, Lord?" I felt a lot of times like old Kudzu, this is a test, ain't it, Lord? Yeah. And that happens in life. So what is it about Samson, and what did Samson do, and what is true about working through him? Because he was listed in the Hall of Fame of Faith here. So what helped Samson be a strong person in the midst of all of this shenanigans going on in life? Let me just give you the first verse. This is Judges 13. That's where the story of Samson is. And beginning at verse 24, when her son was born, they named him Samson, and the Lord blessed him as he grew up. So here's God's anointing on him. Here's God's calling on his life. God blessed him. She had him. Samson's mother had baby Samson, and it was clear that Samson had a call, and he had a purpose, and he had a mission in life. But as he began to grow, things began to happen in his life, and this is where we began to learn lessons. The first lesson is strong people discipline their desires. If you say, "Pastor, what am I supposed to do to help my life be stronger this year? I've prayed, God, look, it's got to be better than 2016. I mean, 2016 was the hardest. This was tough. It just had all kind of issues. Oh, I mean, it was terrible. So God, this year has to be better. So Lord, I need to be stronger this year." Well, what is it that you need to understand about strength? What is your part? What is my part? It is that I discipline my desires. And the reason I say that is because anytime you allow yourself to fulfill the desires of your heart, so to speak, it's going to be a catastrophe. Have you noticed this in just the simple things of life? I'm not talking about, you know, you're going to be a bank robber or an axe murderer or something like that. I'm talking about in the simple, just the simple things of life. Think about what it is you want in life. Think about what you would like to be in life. And you say, "Man, I would like to have a great career in life." Well, you know how you get a great career in life? You know the right people. No, that's not how you get a great career in life. Because even if you did know somebody, once you got there and it became obvious you couldn't do the job, you'd be gone. Oh, yeah. To get a great career in life, you've got to be able to do something. And you've got to discipline yourself in order to learn how to do something. If you want to be, healthy, well, what about that? If you want to be healthy, you can't eat everything your body wants, because your body wants bad stuff, right? Right. It loves carbohydrates. And whenever the stress gets on you, it wants even more carbohydrates. And then whenever you get a bunch of carbohydrates in you, then they get used up pretty quick, and then you crave some more carbs. And so you're popping, you know, cookies and cakes and chips and, you know, and you're just bombing. And you would think that you could satisfy your body by giving it enough carbohydrates, but I'm going to tell you that every time you give it one, all that does is make it want more. Same way with sugar, same thing. You get hungry for some sugar tonight about 9 o'clock. You run to the refrigerator, open it up. You just happen to have a bowl of frozen water and sugar called ice cream. And you reach in there and get that thing out and get you a big bowl of it. And you sit down and say, "Man, this is just exactly what I wanted. Whoa, this is just awesome." I will guarantee you that tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, your body will be saying, "Get me some ice cream." Because you think, see, if I feed it, then it'll be satisfied and I'll be able to go on with life. But I'm telling you, no. And that's the way it is with everything that is bad for you in life. Just take it, you know, just put anything in there. It's called the law of diminishing returns. That's what it's called. It means that whatever it takes today to make me happy, it's going to take more of it tomorrow to give me the same happiness that I had today. This is why people overdose on drugs. What an overdose on drugs is basically somebody who takes so much of it that it stops everything in their body, even the innermost functionings of the brainstem that tells your heart to beat and your lungs to breathe. And then you die. And you know why you took that much? Because you started out with just a little tiny taste and it buzzed you and you loved it. And your body said, give me more of that. And you gave it more. And then over a period of time, it cried for more and more because it gets used to it. Then more and then more. It gets used to it. Then more and then more. And then now instead of a little taste, you pop in like 10 pills in there at one time to try to get the same buzz you got from the little peck when you first started. And finally you take so many, it takes so many that you finally take enough that it stops everything in your life. I'm just saying to you that if our lives are not disciplined, if they're not under control, then nothing that we desire is going to be fulfilled in our life. And to sit here and to wish and to pray and to throw it on God and to say, God, you know, please, I need a break and give me this and give me that and I want this and I want that. What would you do if he gave it to you? I mean, what would happen if you got a job that paid $40 an hour and health insurance and retirement and all that? I mean, and that job required that you know something. Would you be able to do the job once you got it? I know sometimes you might get your foot in the door, but what happens when you get your whole self in the door? You got to perform. I mean, people don't pay people money to do nothing. Well, besides politicians, but I'll tell you, I digress. Samson shows us, look, from the very first moment of his life, it seems like Samson was so undisciplined in life. Samson's problem was women. I mean, just to make it clear to you. And he was always pursuing seemingly some woman somewhere. Now, I do need you to know this because it is important that you understand that Samson was born with a vow to God. Now, a vow to God is like an agreement. It's like a contract. It's like a pledge. God, I pledge to do this. You're on my life. You've given me a call. So here's what I'm responsible to do in my life. And he had a vow, and it was called a Nazirite vow. That was the name of it, a Nazirite vow. And it was a very special vow. And in that vow, Samson could not cut his hair ever. And I know a lot of people, you know, they make a big deal out of the hair deal and all of that. But it wasn't the hair. The hair was not the deal. The hair was just a reflection of the deal. The hair was a proof, was an evidence of the commitment to God. You know, that's what the hair was. And then his mother couldn't drink any, and he couldn't drink any strong drink. And he couldn't, you know, he just couldn't let his life, he couldn't open his life and let the wild horses run. But that seems to be what he wanted to do at every opportunity of his life. And every woman he saw, he wanted so out of control. One day when Samson was in Timnah, he noticed a certain Philistine woman. Remember, Samson's a Jew. And what is a Philistine? A Philistine is everybody that's not a Jew. Okay, that's you and me, right? I mean, they were specific for their day, but in big general terms, they're Gentiles. They're like us. They're not Jews. All right, now let me just ask you this. Just because it's just us talking right now. Would you think that a Nazirite should be messing with a Philistine? I mean, just knowing the vow that you're not going to cut your hair, you're not going to drink strong drink, you're not going to live an open, rebellious, kind of a wicked type life, that's the vow of a Nazarite. A Nazarite life was like the whole way next level of being committed and disciplined in life. Would you think that a Philistine woman would fit into that plan? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So the very first thing right off the bat. Now listen, I'm trying to be helpful here. If when he saw that Philistine woman, the first thing should have popped in, a red flag went boom. No, this is not for you. No, this is not for you. But Samson just ran right through that red flag. And I'm going to tell you something. You run through red flags and you are going to lead to destruction. Are you hearing what I'm saying? Don't think you can run through red flags and pay no consequences. That's why they're red flags. They're meant to stop you and make you think and say, wait a minute here now. This is not the way I can go and I can do. I've got to stop. I've got to turn around. I can't be involved in this. Others can be involved. God just says, hey, have a blessed life. But I can't be involved in this. And so here he just runs, just blows right through one of those red flags in life. His father and his mother objected strenuously. Is that a red flag? When mom and dad see the woman that he's chosen and they say, son, she's a Philistine. Yeah, yeah. Hey, that's not for you. No. And mom and dad, who love you more than anything, and I know that I was a teenager a few years ago, and it's been a long time, but I'm going to tell you, I have a good memory about this. And I can tell you, I had some rebellion against my parents, and I had some thoughts, about running my own life and being angry at them at times and so forth. And I remember all that. And teenage years are rebellious in a lot of ways. But the thing about it now being a parent and a grandparent, I'm going to tell you something from this perspective. From this perspective, there's nobody that loves you more than your mom and daddy do. Nobody loves you more. Nobody cares about you more. Nobody wants the best for you more. And I'm not talking about the dad you don't know that never got in your life. I mean, there are exceptions, but you know what I'm saying. I'm saying that the people you love and the people that love you, when they start saying things to you about what you're doing in life, then you need to listen to what they say. You say, God, I want to be strong this year. God said, all right, I put some people in your life and I'm speaking through them. So when they talk to you, listen to what they say. And when they say, this is not good. No, that's not for you. No, then you need to turn around and walk away. Because desires have to be disciplined. We have bad desires. Think about it. Anything that's bad for you. Now think about it. Anything that's bad for you. Something you can smoke, something you can snort, something that you can chug, something that you can, take on a date. Think about anything that could be bad for you. Do you have to talk yourself into being involved with it? Even if it's terrible, let me just give you an example. I don't know how many of you in here have ever smoked in your life, but at one time in my life, of course, I grew up in a generation, everybody smoked. They smoked on TV. The doctors smoked on TV. Doctors came on commercials on TV and said, hey, this is a cigarette. It's really good for you when your nerves are all a rattle. Take you some of that, and that nicotine will really settle you down. I'm serious right now. I ain't talking about that kind of weed now. All right. But anyway, when I was a teenager, I said, well, let me just try, because my mom and dad smoked and everybody smoked around me and everybody smoked everywhere. Elevators were filled with smoke. That was thought to be okay. And so I tried one, and you know what happened to me? When that smoke hit me, like I went, I kind of puffed it, and then I said, well, it's not too bad, But then I kind of tried to draw a little bit of breath in, And when I did, that smoke went down in my lungs. And the first thing, it was. Woo. man, that's nasty. Give me another puff, would you? It was terrible. But my body said, let's do it again. Because these old crazy bodies want what's bad for it. And if there's anything good for you, you have to discipline yourself in order to have it, right? To be in shape, you can't eat everything you want, and you have to work out every once in a while, and you have to push back from the table, and you have to be under control. To be smart, you have to read some stuff. You have to go to class. You have to be taught some things. You have to study the manual. You have to learn by, you know, your hands, the best way you learn. I mean, you have to discipline yourself in order to do that. To be dumb, you don't have to do anything. Just sit on the couch, you know, and eat pigskins and watch football games. And I'm just saying to you that when we pray and ask God to give us strength, our part is to discipline our desires. And Samson is the perfect example of someone who was super created to do the super job that God needed him to do. And he is a footnote in history. He was designed to be the greatest champion, the greatest hero, the greatest deliverer that Israel ever had. But he's a blip on the radar screen and a footnote in history because he couldn't control himself with all those gifts, with all that talent, with all that ability. He could not control himself. We see this every day. Football players, baseball players, basketball players, rock stars, movie stars, lottery winners, just name it. Go down the list. Name everybody you know that's got it made and is stupid. And you want to look at them and say, what is wrong with you? You idiot. Because you see all of their great gifts, their wonderful talents, their tremendous abilities, their potential for good, and their family to be blessed and their life to be blessed, and you see them just throw it right out the window for the dumbest things that you've ever seen in this world. Because they can't discipline their desires. Samson couldn't get, he said, his father and his mother objected strenuously. Isn't there one woman in our tribe or among all the Israelites you could marry? Why must you go to the pagan Philistines to find a wife? But Samson told his father, get her for me. She's the one I want. So there he is. Here's the second level, or the second thing you can do, suggestion. Strong people restrain their reaction. Strong people don't get out of control when they react to especially other people. I mean, there are many things people can do and many things people have done that had you done what you really wanted to do, you probably would be in jail right now. Am I right about this? I mean, is there anybody else out there like me? How many times have I said, I'm going to kill him. That sucker's dead meat is all I'm telling you. But the Lord, in a moment of time, said, you might not better do that. You might better let that go. And it's so easy to overreact. Samson was the champion of overreacting, seriously. He was brilliant revenge. He was the master of revenge. His whole life revolved around, I'm going to get them back. They did that to me, and I'm going to get them back. And this is a strong warning to those that might live with this kind of thought pattern in life about paying somebody back, about getting them like they got me, about holding these things and waiting for the day. And one day, boy, every dog has his day, and I'm going to get him, boy, when I get my day. Let me just tell you how spiritual your pastor is. This is a testimony for you, and maybe I really shouldn't even say it, but I'll just to let you know, to be transparent and everything. This past Friday, I was coming home from work. Many of you don't know that I work a secular job, but I do, and I have for years and years and years. And, when you start a church with nobody and nothing, and, you know, you got to get out and get a job, you know. So I work over in New Orleans, and I was coming back. I'm driving the company truck, and I'm coming back, and it's raining. You remember Friday? It was raining and cold, and getting colder every minute. And by the time I got back to Mississippi, it was 36 degrees. And so I'm thinking, man, if it gets a few degrees colder, I will have to be careful about these bridges I'm going over and all that kind of stuff. You know how you start thinking. And then I started fantasizing. You know what I fantasized about? I fantasized about the two main people that hurt me the worst in a former situation. I did. I don't know why that popped into my mind. But it just popped into my mind two people that I've had, you know, that really just disappointed me and hurt me and did things and so forth. And I fantasized about them being broken down on the side of the road in this kind of weather. And I'm driving by in my nice warm truck with a seat over there and stopping and raising the window down. And of course, they'd probably recognize me. I recognize them and say, hey, man, it looks like you, it's bad. Yeah, Pastor Keith, I'm so glad you came along. Well, I'll check you later, dude. Roll my window up and get on out. Now, I mean, I told you it wasn't nice. I told you it wasn't good. But would I do that? Would I do that? I would never do that. But my old brain, my old human spirit, the old man inside of me, you know, you don't. When you get saved, the old man doesn't die. You know that, right? The old man's there. You just get a new man to put on top of him. I wish the old man did die when we got saved, because then we wouldn't have to battle with sin ever. But we do. We have to battle with it. And I'm just saying that your reactions to things really make a difference in your life and the strength of your life and the vitality and the witness and the testimony of your life. And Samson didn't control his reactions at all. And I'm just going to give you a couple of little things because it's time for us to go. This right here, now I'm going to tell you about this passage. This passage right here is during Christmas season, I was preaching a message about Christmas. And I made the comment about, if you hadn't plowed with my heifer, you would not have known the answer. And all the people that were here at that moment just started laughing and said, and they were, it was so funny to them, the term plow with my heifer. And I almost couldn't get them back. I had to try three or four times to get them back with me because they wouldn't let it die. You know, they just wanted to play with that a little bit. But finally I got them. And then I said to them, I said, that plow with my heifer came from the Bible. It was said, Samson said it to the people. I said, read about Samson. It's there. It's in the Bible. Well, you're going to get a chance to see it right now. Let me tell you a riddle. This is Samson. Let me tell you a riddle. What was going on is the Philistines were trying to kill him because they knew God was going to use him. And they could never kill him because every time they tried, he would just pop up with great strength and just wipe them out. And so they got with his wife and told her that they were going to kill all of her relatives and burn their houses and all that if she didn't help them and find the answer to his strength and then share that with them. And so Samson picked up on that. And so he would tell her false things. He would say, well, if you bind me with green ropes, then I'll be weak as any man. And then they bound him. He'd be asleep, and then the green ropes, they'd come put the green ropes on him. And then she'd cry out, Samson, the enemy is upon you. And he would jump up and just bust out of the green ropes and just wipe them out. I mean, body slam them, kill them right there. And so it became obvious that he was toying with her. Well, Samson says to the people that are trying to kill him, let me tell you a riddle. And Samson said to them, if you can give me the answer within the 7 days of the feast, I'll give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 garments and 30 sets of clothes. Tell us your riddle, they said. Let us hear it. He replied, out of the eater, see if you can solve this riddle. Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. That's the riddle. out of the eater, something to eat, and out of the strong, something sweet. That was the riddle. For 3 days, they could not give the answer. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we'll burn you and your father's household to death. Did you invite us here to steal our property? Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing, you hate me. You didn't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer. I haven't even explained it to my father or mother, he replied. So why should I explain it to you? She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. Men, do not respond to this. Just look straight ahead right now. I know you want to look at her, but don't. That's not a good time. Just look straight ahead. So on the seventh day, he finally told her, because she continued to press him. She pestered him, bothered him. She in turn explained the riddle to her people. Before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town said to him, what is sweeter than honey? And what is stronger than a lion? And Samson said to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle. The riddle was, Samson did this. Samson slew a lion and left him beside the road. And when Samson came back through sometime later, the honeybees had built a honeycomb inside the carcass of the lion. And Samson got some honey out of that honeycomb and ate it. And so the riddle was, out of the eater came some food, and out of the strong came something sweet, honey. Brilliant. Brilliant. What did he do? Let's see if I got that. Then the Spirit of the Lord powerfully took control of him. He went down to the town of Ashkelon. Look at him, man. Killed 30 men, took their belongings, and gave their clothing to the men who had answered his riddle. But Samson was furious about what happened, and he went back home to live with his father and mother. He left his wife, went back home, said, I'm going back to mama and daddy. Notice what he did. He went to another town, killed 30 of those people, took their clothes off of them, came back and brought it and gave it to the people that he promised he'd give 30. Changed the rate. That man was wild. I mean, he was not under control whatsoever. Samson said, this time I cannot be blamed for everything that I'm going to do to you Philistines. Because you did this, Samson vowed, I'll take my revenge on you and I won't stop until I'm satisfied. So 3,000 men of Judah went down to get Samson in the cave of the rock of Edom. They said to Samson, don't you realize the Philistines rule over us? What are you going to do? But Samson replied, I'm only going to pay them back for what they did to me. That's the excuse, right? Hey, I'm not doing anything bad. They did it to me. Then he went out and caught Then he went out and he caught 300 foxes. He tied their tails together in pairs and he fastened a torch to each pair of tails. That's the original tail lights, by the way. Then he lit, forgive me. Then he lit the torches and let the foxes run through the fields of the Philistines. He burned all their grain to the ground, including the grain still in piles and all that had been bundled. He also destroyed their grapevines and their olive trees. That is creative revenge. Tied those foxes' tails, and as they ran off, they took the fire with them and just spread everywhere to somebody's fields. Don't try this at home. As Samson arrived at Lehi, the Philistines came shouting in triumph, but the Spirit of the Lord powerfully took control of Samson, and he snapped the ropes on his arms as if they were burnt strands of flax, and they fell from his wrist. Then he picked up a donkey's jawbone. Man, what a creator. Didn't even have a weapon around him. So what did he do? He found a donkey's jawbone. And with that donkey's jawbone, he killed 1,000 Philistines with it. Good night. Creativity. Strong people control their actions. Here's this other thing, and I'm stopping. All right. Strong people keep their commitments. Let me read the passage, and I'll close with this. What does it mean when a preacher says, I'll close with this? No, it means nothing. All right, there you go. All right. Again, the Israelites did what was evil in the Lord's sight, so the Lord handed them over to the Philistines, who kept them in subjection for 40 years. In those days, a man named Manoah from the tribe of Dan lived in the town of Zorah. His wife was unable to become pregnant, and they had no children. The angel of the Lord appeared to Manoah's wife and said, "Even though you've been unable to have children, you will soon become pregnant and give birth to a son. You must not drink wine or any other alcoholic drink or eat any forbidden food. You will become pregnant and give birth to a son, and his hair must never be cut, for he will be dedicated to God as a Nazirite from birth. He will rescue Israel from the Philistines." Later, Samson fell in love with a woman named Delilah, who lived in the valley of Sorek. The leaders of the Philistines went to her and said, "Find out from Samson what makes him strong and how he can be overpowered and tied up securely, and each of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver." So Delilah said to Samson, "Please tell me what makes you so strong and what it would take to tie you up securely." And Samson replied, "Well, if I'm tied up with the 7 new bowstrings that have not yet been dried, I will be weak as anyone else." So the Philistine leaders brought Delilah 7 new bowstrings, and she tied Samson up with them. She had hidden some of the men in one of the rooms of her house, and she cried out, "Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you." But Samson snapped the bowstrings as if they were string that had been burned in a fire, so the secret of his strength was not discovered. Afterward, Delilah said to him, "You have made fun of me and told me a lie. Now please tell me how you can be tied up securely." Samson replied, "Well, if I'm tied up with brand new ropes that have never been used, then I'll be weak as everyone else." So Delilah took new ropes and tied him up. The men were hiding in the room. Delilah cried out, "Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you." But Samson snapped the ropes from their arms as if they were threaded. Now, let me stop here and just make a point before I read the rest of it. What I want you to see is I want you to see how careless Samson was with the power of God, with the commitment that he made to God. Yeah, with Samson was born and he had the vow, and the vow, and what was the vow going to give him? It was going to give him the ability to be the greatest rescuer that Israel ever had. But all through his life, he was so careless with that calling in his life. It was like he toyed with it. It was like he ran up to the edge to see how close he could get to the edge before, without falling off. I mean, how close to hell can I live and still be a Christian, you know? I've had people, "Can I smoke and be a Christian? Can I drink and be a Christian? You know, if I'm married to the third wife, can I be a Christian?" I mean, people have all kind of questions like that. And, I know people are interested and they want to be right with God. But when you ask a question like that, you know what you're reflecting? You're reflecting the fact that you want to know where the line is, so you can probably go over there near it and not cross over it. But the object of the Christian life is not to live near the line. The object of the Christian life is to get as far away from the line as you possibly can and stay away from it. But here's Samson, the perfect example. You say, "I want to be strong." Well, stay away from the line. Here's Samson, the perfect example of somebody who runs up to the line every time. Now look, I mean, we've read so far, and Delilah's badgering him, and he's giving her, okay, do this. See, he's toying with her. He's playing with her. But what I want you to notice, he's going to get closer and closer to the truth. You watch, okay? You watch. Watch how subtly this happens. Now, this happens to us too. This is a picture of us. Then Delilah said, "You've been making fun of me and telling me lies. Won't you please tell me how you can be tied up securely?" Samson replied, "Well, if you weave the 7 braids of my hair into the fabric on your loom and tighten it with the loom shuttle, I will be weak as anyone else." So while he slept, Delilah wove the 7 braids of his hair into the fabric and tightened it with the loom shuttle. Again, she cried out, "Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you." But Samson woke up and pulled back the loom shuttle and yanked his hair away from the loom and the fabric. So he still hadn't told her, but he's getting closer to the truth. You see, he's getting closer to the edge. It's that hair that's going to do it. And it's not the hair, it's what the hair represents. The hair represents a vow to God. This is about our commitments we make to God, folks. This is about what we said to God. God, if you will save my soul, I will give my life to you. I will never walk the other way. I will always listen to you and obey you. You are my God. I give myself completely to you. Lord, take my life. Wash me from my sin. I belong to you. I wave the white flag. You're the Lord of my life. That's what we said to him when we gave ourselves to him. But here we are walking closer and closer to the line to see just how far we can go without stepping over the line. And Samson, then Delilah pouted, how can you say you love me when you don't confide in me? You made fun of me 3 times now and you still haven't told me what makes you strong. So day after day, she nagged him until he couldn't stand it any longer. Finally, Samson told her his secret. My hair has never been cut, he confessed. For I was dedicated to God as a Nazarite from birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and I would become weak as everyone else. Delilah realized he had finally told her the truth. So she sent for the Philistine leaders to come back one more time. So she said, for he has told me everything. So the Philistine leaders returned and brought the money with them. Delilah lulled Samson to sleep with his head in her lap. And she called in a man to shave off his hair, making his capture certain, and his strength left him. And she cried out, Samson, just like she always did. And he is asleep, careless about his strength, about God. He's asleep. He thinks he's going to pop up and do what he always has done. But the power of God has departed from his life because he can't keep his commitment to God. I will do as I do before, shake myself free, but he didn't realize the Lord had left him. And I'll tell you the rest of the story, just in a nutshell. They capture him. They take him and they hook him to a grinding wheel, like a donkey or an ox. You've seen them, you know. On the old movies and stuff, you've seen them. They hook an ox into it, and it goes around in a circle, and it's got a big stone in here, and they put their grain here, and as the oxen just goes around the circle pushing the big stone, the stone grinds the grain up. That's what they hooked him to. So the greatest champion, the greatest deliverer, the most gifted man God ever gave on this earth becomes nothing but a grinder mule. An ox, a beast of burden. And they poke his eyes out. And finally one day the little boy that takes care of the ox comes over there and he takes Samson. Imagine that. Imagine the strongest man in the world, the greatest leader. Imagine the most powerful person on earth being led around like a little dog by a child. And they led him up. He led him up to the Colosseum. Samson said, what's all that noise? And they said, well, they're having a big celebration in the big temple and blah, blah, blah. Samson said, well, you know, I've never been up there before and I would like to kind of go that way. And the little boy says, well, I don't guess it would hurt because you're blind and, you know, you all that. And his hair had grown back by now and all that kind of stuff. And he's blind, but he's been, you know, he's a beast of burden. And so the little boy leads him up there. And when he leads him up there, Samson starts praying in his heart and he says, Lord, One more time. Give me some strength. One more time, God. Just one more time. For your glory. For your glory, God. For your kingdom. For your people. God, give me just one more time. One more strength at this. And he started feeling around because his eyes were poked out. And he felt the column holding up this big structure with all these people in. And then he felt the other column with his other hand. And then with all the might that God could give him, he pushed those columns, and the columns fell, and the buildings and the temples and the Colosseum fell, and the people were destroyed. One more time, and he died in that himself. So, tragic end for a tremendous hero, for somebody who was designed by God to be great. All of us are designed by God to be great. God has a purpose for every one of us. He has a call for everyone. It's not just preachers who are called. We're all called. And God has a purpose. And I'm going to tell you something. Your purpose is just as great as my purpose. It's just a different purpose. But it's just as great because if God gave it to you, it's great. And it needs to be done, or else He wouldn't have given it to you. And the commitment that you have made and that I have made to Him is, God, we belong to You, and we will do what You give us to do. And Your purpose is what we want on this earth. And what will make us strong is to discipline ourselves. Hey, look, God's going to help us. God's going to strengthen us. God's going to work in us. But we have some responsibility too, to discipline our desires, to restrain our reactions, and don't be so reactionary and wild about things. And then to keep our commitments that we've made to God and the strength of God. You say, man, I want 2017 to be great. Well, there you go. There's your three little simple things right there. All right? Discipline your desires. Put that on your refrigerator. And whenever you pop it open at 3 o'clock in the morning looking for the ice cream, just look right at that sign that says, I'm disciplining my desires. And then control my reactions and then keep my commitments. Look, three simple things, not complicated, not hard. I believe God will bless it. Won't you stand to your feet, would you?